We heard plenty in the news about Venezuela when Hugo Chavez was its president. He certainly provided some indelible moments on the world stage, like following George W. Bush in a speech at the United Nations and telling the room that the devil had recently been there. Chavez's work within Venezuela certainly changed many lives as he worked toward what he called socialism for the 21st century. Chavez died of cancer nearly 3 years ago. Venezuela is in the midst of political change after a recent election. Our guests this hour know the country well. They're calling them Samuel and Justina Nala. They live in our part of the world. Justina is from there, and Samuel has spent a great deal of time there. He is the author of a book called The Shadow of God. And I want to welcome the Nalas here to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So what you in particular, Samuel, what sent you to Venezuela in the first place?
Well, I went into the Peace Corps in the late 60s. And so that's where I met Justina. And a few years after that, we got married. So, you know, basically I have close to 50 years of experience inside and outside of Venezuela because we visit on a regular basis.
Sounds like you got into something of a love affair with the country.
I did. I love the country, the beautiful people, beautiful country, and it's made my life beautiful, I guess, in a way.
Keep talking into the other microphone, if you would. I think I have a loose connection here that I have to trace down. So, when and where did you two meet?
We met in a city called Valera. In western Venezuela, and that was in early 1968.
And how did you guys stay together after this? This is Emily jumping in here while we do some technical difficulties. Sammy, you met in 68, and then how did you fall in love?
So you met in 68, Emily says. You don't have the microphone, the headphones on. So you met in 68. How did you guys meet and fall in love?
Well, I was coaching basketball. And Justina, interestingly enough, was interested. I think I should let her tell this part of the story.
So come on up, Justina. Don't be afraid.
Okay. The story is that I was not really looking forward to come to America to start with. I was going to school in the evening because when I grew up, being a woman and getting an education, high school education, it was not allowed. I was 18 years old. By law, my family cannot tell me not to go to school. Then I went to school in the evening to get my high school degree, and that's how I met Phil.
So you point out right up front in your book, The Shadow of God, Samuel, that democracy has been shaky there for half a century, and really has only existed since about 1959 or so. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. I think the first democratic elections were right around 1959, 1960, and there is a history of peaceful exchange of governments, usually every 5 years. The problem that there was the amount of corruption. And when one political party would take control, a lot of times it would take maybe a year before they would replace everybody in the old party. So there'd be like a year like hesitation, and then the new party would come in and get all their people in place. They'd run the government, and, you know, it worked in a sense, but there was so much, there was a lot of corruption, and things just never worked the way you would expect a democratic government to work.
And so in the book, in the Shadow of God that you wrote, Philip Miller is the chief character here.
Right.
He and his adventures grew out of what?
Well, this is a guy that's a young American, and he's, you know, he's just graduated from college. He's looking for an opportunity to maybe do something good around the world, get into some kind of organization where he can do some good before he comes back and gets into the workaday world here in the United States. So that's kind of what motivates him.
And how similar is he to you? Is he?
Only a little bit. Yeah.
So, by the time In the Shadow of God starts, Chavez has been in power for 10 years.
Right.
How different a country over the course of those 10 years from what he found when he took office?
Well, I think first of all, I think it has to be recognized that when Chavez first came into power, he came into power, he was able to get power because of the way the government had been functioning before. And then there was an oil crisis, and so the people weren't very happy. So he won, an electoral vote and took power. And he really did come in, I believe, with the idea of helping the common person. And I think he had a lot of honest and, he came from poverty and he was going to help the poor people, give them rights and give them a chance to make a good living.
But he quickly became unpopular outside Venezuela. And in fact, we can talk about the American coup later on, or the American participating coup. What was it that Chavez did power go to his head or something? What happened, do you suppose?
I think it's like the old saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think he came in with a lot of good ideas. A lot of things start happening along the way. But I think he just became intoxicated with the level of power that he had. And it's gotten to the point now where the party is just staying in power. That's all they want. They don't care about anything now except to stay in power.
So, preservation of
power.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
not unusual.
They've lost the reasons that they got into power a long time ago.
Samuel Nahla is the author of the book In the Shadow of God, which is fiction, but he's got a lot of real-world experience in Venezuela himself to talk about. His wife, Justina Nahla, is here as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with them and with your phone calls and emails in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guests today are Samuel and Justina Nahla. They make their home in Siskiyou County, but they are both well-versed in Venezuelan life. Justina is from Venezuela. Samuel met her there. He has written a book called In the Shadow of God. It's a fictional book about a character named Philip Miller, who bears some resemblance to Samuel Nahla, we're finding out. But we're doing a lot of exploring of what's going on in Venezuela, where the political situation is changing now in these post-Hugo Chavez days. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your reflections, your comments, your questions at 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So we're talking about Hugo Chavez and your belief that absolute power corrupts absolutely. He certainly had a lot of power.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, though, the Chavismo, Chavism, Hugo Chavism, and what some of the central tenets are in Venezuela.
Well, I think the Chavismo, as it initially began, it was, as I stated, a movement to really try to help the downtrodden and the poor people in the country. And he started with what they call a lot of missions, and these missions are like social programs. And, they help. There was missions for people to be educated. There's a lot of people that were in their 20s and 30s that couldn't read or write in those days. And so he had a lot of missions like that that would help people get started and learn the basics of reading and especially into the barrios. There was missions, healthcare missions in the poor barrios. And there was a lot of good programs. The problem is it just all twisted out of control and it's just turned into a disaster because of bad economics from the government.
How widespread is poverty in Venezuela, and how does that jibe with the fact that this is an oil-rich country?
The latest figure I just read is that the poverty level is now at 73%, which is higher than it ever was. It's really amazing how it's spun out of control. I mean, it's almost... it's in some ways so bizarre that it's hard for us to understand here in America how it could be the way it is. But I think the first thing you have to understand is that there's like four different exchange rates for the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So if I got the official exchange rate, like out of an ATM at the airport in Caracas, and went to buy a Big Mac, it would cost me like $50 to get the Big Mac.
Okay? I noticed the vignette like that in the book, where you go to an ATM or Phil Miller goes to an ATM
exactly.
and ends up paying way too much for orange juice.
Yeah, yeah. But so if you come into the country, you have to go through what they call the black market, because that's the actual value of the money. And so it's like the official rate right now is 6.3 bolivares, which is their money to the dollar. But the actual value is over 800 to the dollar right now. So it's way over 100 times different, not 100%, but 100 times. So if you can get dollars, you can do well.
Let's talk about the poverty. Just in Justina, what kind of an upbringing did you have in Venezuela? I mean, what how wealthy or not was your household?
I was a very poor young woman.
Okay, that microphone is still not working, and I don't know why. Can you just push over and take Samuel's for a second? There we go.
I was a very poor young woman. My family in Venezuela, they were immigrants too. They came from the West Indies, from an island called Grenada. Then when I was growing up, my family was struggling to become part of Venezuelan society. And education, because I was a young girl, it was not allowed in a way.
Okay, so I mean, what was daily life like? Were you really struggling to put food on the table? That sort of thing?
No, because my family, we have enough to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a decent living, but I cannot say I was a rich girl. Mm-hmm. I was working class.
Still intrigued by the idea that education for girls was not allowed.
In that time, education for a young girl was not allowed because they were thinking, why waste money in educating a girl when she's going to get married and raise a family? Then the priority was for the boys, not for the girls. That's why when I was 18 years old, I waited, because my dream was not to be a typical Venezuelan mother. I wanted an education to get out of poverty.
And so was there a fair amount of ridicule or something for women who did attempt to get an education or to get a job?
Few women in my era had an education. Only the upper class, they were able to get an education, because there were few university and high school in my country when I was growing up. Then for me to get a high school, I needed to move to a bigger town, to a bigger city, and I live in a fisherman village.
So school just not really available
in
for lots
time,
of people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something, you know, that's the way it was. But I was a little bit different. I didn't want to become a typical mother, and that maybe was the problem.
Mm-hmm. Samuel, let's see if this microphone works again.
Is it? I don't know.
No, apparently not. All right, so let's do the chair swap again, and we can put Samuel back in the microphone. I want to ask about Hugo Chavez saying he wants to chuck out all the old views except the Bolivarianism. What does that mean?
Well, you know, basically, you know, I think over the years, and I think you alluded to it, in 2002, 2003, there was like a strike in the oil industry. And when he survived that, the only people that stuck by him were the Cubans. And so I think after that point in time, he became more and more controlled in a way by the Castros out of Cuba. And I think that's when things really started to change.
And, you know, he this is supposed to be what he called socialism for the 21st century. How did he consolidate power? How did Chavez do that?
Well,
I mean, because there is still a legislator and legislature and courts.
Did it through the electoral process. I think there was so much disenchantment from the governments before that he was able to get in, and then he convinced people that he had you know, this socialism, this Bolivarian revolution on the way that was going to help change everybody's life. And so I think the first thing he did is he changed the Constitution. And by changing that Constitution, he started to gain a sense of control of the country. And then the legislature really was elected almost 100% Chavistas. And so, you know, he kind of had a rubber stamp for anything he wanted. And he kept, because he had gained total control through the electoral process, now he started manipulating. Now the judicial system was changed, and just everything within the country started to be changed, and it started becoming more and more like a dictatorship where he had total control. And then, in my mind, I felt like he became so obsessed with power that he started surrounding himself only with people that would tell him what he wanted to hear. And so he got farther and farther away from reality.
Justina, what was the perspective from people like yourself who had been in Venezuela for life? I mean, was there a great enthusiasm for Chavez when he first came into office that he was going to solve a lot of problems?
Yes. One example I tell my husband was...
Okay, we thought we had the microphone fixed this time. It must be the cord is all I can finally conclude here. So let's put you in the other chair. Sorry about this. We'll stop the swap at some point.
Okay, well...
The question was about Hugo Chavez and what he seemed like to the average Venezuelan and to your family, for example, when he first came on the scene.
One of the things I explained my husband why Chavez got power was because one example was my mother. We were doing really well after I was 14 years old. Then we went downhill in society. We were almost starving, almost homeless. My mother worked as a maid. And as a maid, she was paid whatever the people wanted to pay her. Sometimes they didn't pay her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and a lot of people in the society, the poor people were like that. And that's why he got in power, because he promised the poor people, the poor workers, they will be able to get a salary. And he established for the first time laws to protect the workers, the poor workers.
And so this appealed to a lot of people. It's like, we're
going
to get some money. Uh-huh.
Yes. And that's how he got the support, because he promised changes and protection by the law for the poor people.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to switch seats again while I let people know that you're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. We're talking about Venezuela with Justina Nala, who grew up there, and her husband Samuel Nala. They live in Siskiyou County now, but do get back to Venezuela from time to time. A lot changing in Venezuela still. Hugo Chavez dead now for 3 years. And the legislature now apparently in control of an opposition party. We'll get into that in just a few moments. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, your own stories about Venezuela, if you've been there, are welcome. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Now, Chavez, we talked about earlier, the short coup, he was actually out of power for 2 days in 2002. What happened there?
You know, it's hard to understand what happened. There was an oil strike, and I believe it was supported. It's hard to tell if there was support from outside the country or not. But the idea, I believe, at that point in time was to try to get him out of power. And it actually worked for a day or two. And then somehow, because we were actually there when this happened, mm-hmm. somehow he came back into power. We remember that the lines to get gasoline in those days were like miles long. Uh-huh. There was no oil, no gasoline. And everybody thought Chavez was going to be out. And then somehow, miraculously, he got back into power. And to me, that part's a mystery how that ever happened. But then at that point in time, he was able to consolidate his power because he defeated his enemies.
That's got to be a first, the guy surviving a coup attempt that apparently had some American backing
in
there.
It's possible.
At least the American sentiment backing. Justina, you're making a face. What did your family think about it?
I believe that coup was done by him, by his own people, to really, you know, that's the theory. The coup really was not the American coup. It was Chavista to try to make sure to get more sympathy and get more power for themselves. And he was very smart, too. Because then he started buying the military, giving them everything they wanted. They became so powerful. Then if he has the military in his purse, he has complete power. Because the military is the only people, the only group that can protect the people. And if they are bad, they're not going to go against Chavez because he giving them everything they want to.
That is something that we have talked about a few times on the program, about how people who are in strong positions of power stay in strong positions of power. They get friends in high places.
Yes.
They get the wealthy people behind them in a lot of cases, and they get the military behind them.
But in this case, if only the military and the poor people, the wealthy people, they have left the country, and all the educated people have left the country. But he aligned himself with the poor, 70-some percent, that's the majority, and the military, that's a really strong force to stay in power.
All right, so it sounds like there's been a bit of a brain drain then, from what you're saying in
Venezuela.
Oh,
yes, intellectuals
and people with money have just taken off.
And professional. They're going to Chile, to Ecuador, Argentina. My country, really, right now, we're only a skeleton of what we were before. And to rebuild our country, our country is going to be years. But things as well, it's changing because the scarcity of product and food.
Let's talk about what's happening there now then, because there was just another round of elections in Venezuela ending, I guess, December 6th, and it ended up with the opposition party, the non-Chavista party, with about two-thirds of the seats in the legislature. Is this what I hear?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, so what and we haven't even talked about the fact that Chavez has been dead for the better part of 3 years now. Nicolas Maduro was his handpicked successor. So now Maduro is still in power as president, but you've got this legislature that is largely against him. What do either of you see developing in the days ahead? Justina?
We believe Maduro is not the one who's running the country. The one who's running the country, his second in command, Cabellos, mm-hmm. and the Cuban brothers. But Maduro is only a puppet of the government. He's not running the country because he was a bus driver. There's nothing wrong with bus driver. But how are you going to run an economy that's what had the biggest production of oil in the world? And he's a driver, a bus driver. Nothing against bus driver, the educated, but he's not prepared to run the country. Then he's only a puppet. The one who runs the country is Raul and his Cuban people.
And, Raul Castro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Cabello.
Cabello is the second in command?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so why not run the country himself? Because
he's hated by the people.
Maduro is?
Cabello is.
Oh, okay. So this is sort of like Tom DeLay putting Dennis Hastert in control of the U.S. House of Representatives, because Tom DeLay realizes that so few people like him.
Yeah. He's really hated because he's a ex-military man, and he's extremely corrupt. He does whatever he wants in my country.
So now there's a discussion of, I noticed the word impeachment was coming up, with the two-thirds of the national legislature the National Assembly, I should say, in the hands of the party that is not non-Chavista, that there may be moves to impeach Maduro. Either of you read much into that?
I don't see how that can happen until the military changes colors, you know, because right now, as long as the military is on Maduro's side, then I don't see that there'll be a change. I think this is going to be very interesting now because, like you said, the legislature is now in control of the opposition, but the president Maduro was still there till 2019. So you're going to have 3 years here where it's really hard to tell what's going to happen. But I don't think they will get Maduro out of there. There's too many people that are too entrenched, that are making too much money, that have too much at stake, including the military, to change this government. So it's possible that he may end up ruling by decree and make it a really honest dictatorship. I think that's possible, but who knows exactly what's going to happen. I think the good news is that the spotlight is a little more on Venezuela than it's ever been. So I think we're going to be able to see a little more honestly what's going on down there.
Justina, you do still have family there?
Oh, all my family's in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. But my family's, that's why we use a different type of name. We use a different type of name to protect my family and my friends. Because it's the secret police that no one knows about it. But I know because I have a nephew that's in the secret police. Then one example, we bought some property a long time ago, finca, a ranch. And this, my business partner was a crook. They might needed to get rid of the ranch. Then my nephew, that's the secret police, a military man, told me to give him his name to dispose of him.
Really?
Yes. Then that's something not too many people know. But a lot of people are disappearing in Venezuela and no one knows. Plus, Chavez created a group called the Tupamaros.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the enforcement without the law. They do whatever they want, kill people and disappear people. They kidnap, they don't know. No one talk about that either.
All right. We'll come back and talk about the disappearances and the Tupamaros when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Justina and Samuel Nala. Back on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about Venezuela with them and with your phone calls and emails in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guests today are Samuel Nala, the author of a book called In the Shadow of God. It's a fictional piece about life in Venezuela for an American trying to do some good for poor people in the country, but also about the larger context of what went on in Chavez's Venezuela under Hugo Chavez. Samuel Nala has many of the same experiences as his character, Philip Miller, and his wife, Justina, is from Venezuela. They live in Siskiyou County now. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about their experiences there. 800-838-3760 on the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Vince in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Colombia, not far from the Venezuela border near Cucuta. And I was just wondering if the gentleman could speak about how the Peace Corps was perceived by the Venezuelan government while he was there and now.
All right. Good question. Thanks for that.
I think when I was there, that's way back in the late 60s, we were received well. You know, we had a number of volunteers in the country. But somewhere along the line, I think in the 1970s, the Peace Corps was terminated in Venezuela. And I'm not exactly sure of the reasons, but so there hasn't been a Peace Corps presence in Venezuela since probably the late 70s.
But Venezuelan people saw the Peace Corps as an agent of the CIA. That's what the people really believe in Venezuela, that the Peace Corps was agent of the CIA. But they were treated really well.
Really? Oh, so they thought the CIA. Well,
yes.
What is this because of the fact that there were secret police in Venezuela as well, that they would use the same sorts of fronts organizations?
No. In those days, we were pretty innocent society. It was not all this division that we have today. But in those days, you know, it was a movement called MIR that wanted change. That was the Movimiento Revolucionario Izquierdista.
Mm-hmm.
And people believe, you know, they were really spies.
Izquierdista, the left, is that what it
means?
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about the Tupamaros. You started to talk about those. This is the force that they grew up under Chavez.
Yes.
And what did they do?
They are motorcycles. Chavez gave them motorcycle, and they brought a lot of guns from Russia. And they're armed. They're the only people they are legally armed outside the military and the police. And they can go at midnight because stories been told to me by people that I have seen and they have happened to them. They go to midnight to their house, pull them out of the bed. And one example was, we don't know the reason why this guy got pulled out of his home, out of his bed, and was killed in front of his family.
No explanation.
No explanation. And another time was in the city of El Vigía. 25 young high school kids, they were having pizza, and the Tupamaros came with gun and killed a lot of those kids. And you don't hear that in the news.
Well, you get into a situation, too. I mean, one of the things, obviously, that keeps a free society free, you don't need the headphones anymore.
Oh,
one of the things that keeps a free society free is a free press, free media. And in your lifetime, was there anything quite like that in Venezuela?
Never. For the first time in my life, the country's divided. In ideology between Chavista and the opposition. before when we have the Acción Democrática, that was one of the party, and COPEI was the other party. We were one country, one society. It was corruption, it was, you know, problem division because you were Copellano, Adecos. But we don't have the division as Venezuelan we have today. And the government did that through brainwashing education. In elementary school now, children, they are taught that America is the enemy. America is the problem that's causing Venezuela's problem right now. It's not the mismanagement of the economy. Then that's what's happening right now, is the division. But we never before, the Chavez came into power, we have the problem of division as Venezuela, as one. We're not one anymore.
People don't think of themselves as Venezuelans first. They think of them as parts
Chavista
of Chavistas. Yeah.
And opposition. The opposition, they call, what the name they call the opposition?
I don't know.
Oligarchs? Or it's
they have,
a word
a
that's
a
really like you, the upper class, even if you are poor.
Right.
If you don't believe with their ideology, you are an enemy of the country.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because since the Chavistas claim to be the agents of the poor, the people trying to help the poor, it seems like anybody who would oppose them would be painted as people who are for the rich. And so it
yes,
sounds like exactly
yes,
what happened.
Yes, that's what happened.
They're shown as the oligarchs or something.
Yeah, the oligarchs.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
We never seen that before, and that's why even today my country's complete ruin. People are dying because no medication. You need to be in line 5 or more hours for food. And you cannot find the basic product. They still believe that Chavez is the best thing for the country, even though we're in complete ruins.
Mm-hmm. And anybody with a long enough memory, and you don't have to be that old, would remember the days before Chavez when
yes,
it wasn't quite
yeah.
that bad, was it?
Mm-hmm.
It has always been a fairly crime-ridden country, at least in the major cities, for a long time, hasn't it?
Well, you know, it used to be a lot safer. I mean, in the old days, I never had any problems walking down a street anywhere in the country. Right now, except for the small towns, I don't think I'd be walking around. It's really gotten dangerous because there's so many arms. You know, I mean, one of the things Chavez did was to arm these militias that we were talking about, the Tupamaros and mm-hmm. other militias. And then everybody that's in the military is armed, and everybody that's in the national police force is armed. And so there's a lot of the crime comes from these groups, and it's kind of self-protected crime. So it's just not a safe place to be now. I mean, it's ironic, you know, the gentleman called about Colombia. Colombia is now a much safer country than Venezuela. I mean, you can walk the streets in Colombia freely, but in Venezuela, you don't feel safe like you used to.
And Colombia was the center of the cocaine cartels
exactly.
for years. Put your headphones back on because we have another question for you. We're talking to Samuel Nala and Justina Nala. Samuel wrote a book about his experiences in Venezuela, fictionalized. It's about another character called Philip Miller. It's called In the Shadow of God. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Cynthia in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
I'm wondering what your guests think of Donald Trump's rhetoric and whether if Donald Trump became a president here in the U.S., whether he would have that same, you know, heavy-handed approach to absolute power and the way he approaches problems and so forth. Just interested in their feelings about that.
All right. Thank you, Cynthia. Appreciate it. A little conjecture here, then. When you look at Donald Trump and the way he speaks and the things he says, does it remind you at all of Hugo Chavez?
Yes. One thing is when Donald Trump is creating a division in this country with immigration. Immigrants built this country from the beginning. We all immigrant from the beginning. Even the Native American, they came to this country as immigrant. And if you allow the people to divide themselves because color, religion, or ideology, you are already putting the seed of dissension, division. This country is built in the idea that you come here as an immigrant and you work. Yes, it's a few bad seeds, but like in everything else, you're going to find bad seeds even in the society right now. Then Trump, to me, is a very dangerous. He is so egotistical. He loved the power. He reminded me a lot of Hugo Chavez. You know?
In the Hugo Chavez years, how much of a cult of personality was this? I get the feeling from what you write in the book, Samuel, that there are lots of portraits of Hugo Chavez all over Venezuela.
Yes.
It's almost like he saw himself as a god, I believe. I think he saw himself as the father of the country, you know. And you see everywhere you go in the country, there's different huge signs of Chavez, like blessing children or giving food or building a dam or something. Like he did everything for the people. And I think he wanted to be seen kind of like as if he were the Pope or God of the country, and that he was taking care of his flocks. I don't know that my wife agrees with this. My feeling was one of the reasons he died is I think he got sick because he realized that his dream was not going to become a reality. He saw that it was starting to break down. And I think I really do believe he started losing it a little bit mentally because it wasn't going to become what he thought it was going to become. And he just couldn't control it. It got to a certain point where it got out of control and the corruption was just ruining everything.
Well, you paint him in the book as a guy who had a bit of a screw loose to begin with because the story about him being angry because he couldn't play baseball?
that's my take on it. I actually know a friend that coached his brother and then played against him when he was a baseball player. And he was, a very mediocre baseball player, but I believe he thought he was going to make it to the major leagues. And when it didn't happen, I really feel it's kind of weird, but I feel like that affected on his take on the United States, how he viewed the United States. Like they did something to him to make it not happen. And, you know, that's the best thing he does and did as a leader is point the finger at other people. If it wasn't the United States' fault, it was Colombia's fault. If it wasn't Colombia's fault, it was Great Britain's fault. It was somebody's fault. Everything that went wrong in the country, the problems were never faced. There was always blame. Mm-hmm. And so instead of dealing with the problems, we just blame someone and the problems just kept getting worse. And now we've arrived at the point where we are today.
This gets back to a situation where, of course, since it's always somebody else's fault, it's never the fault of the people inside the country. So how did Hugo Chavez manage through his time in office, which was about 15 years, wasn't it, to avoid any blame for the problems of the country?
It's interesting. The poor people idolized him. They didn't see anything wrong because the poor people were getting cheap food. That's the basic to survive. Cheap education, and they felt like for the first time they have power. The masses, the poor people, have the power, and they never saw anything wrong. That's why he stayed in power. Maduro is not Chavez. If Chavez was still in power, Venezuela, that election will never happen. And the last election happened for the assembly because a military man came at 10 o'clock Sunday night and say the election is going to be respected because it was a meeting between Maduro, Cabello, and the high rank in the government to squash the result. And this, the minister of defense, a military man, said no, he's not going to allow that. The election is going to be respected, otherwise we'll never have heard Maduro will have won.
Hmm. Well, we'll see what happens in the days ahead. Now,
but one question. Maduro already is playing his car.
Uh-huh.
What he's done, he did this week already, he already electing all the judges in his favor because nothing can be passed in the government without the approval of the judges.
Okay, so the judicial system is still very much under the thumb of the presidency. John in Ashland writes an email here. He says, in many ways, your guests paint a very sour picture of Venezuela. Corruption, disappearances, classism, crime, shortages, etc. I'm curious why people continue to live in such circumstances and why your guests speak so fondly about the country.
I speak fondly about the country because it's a beautiful place. The nature, God gave us a beautiful present. We have so many variety of animals, nature. The people are beautiful. Well, as Venezuelans, we are people who can accept a lot. We like to have a great time. We keep going with life, even if the hardest things in life, we keep going. As a poor person, how are you going to get a visa to come to America? It's impossible. Even if you are persecuted, you're not going to get visas because the embassy of the U.S. is almost out of Venezuela.
We have a final comment here from Steve in Medford, who wants to come back in on the Trump and Chavez comparison. He says, so Venezuela stands as a cautionary tale of what happens when a narcissistic populist with no real educational experience in political science or law is elected to the highest office of the land. Is anybody listening? So thank you for that thought, Steve. And with that, we wrap up our discussion with the Nahles. Samuel Nahles' book is called In the Shadow of God. It's a fictionalized account of one man's journey to Venezuela and his finding of life and love there, which sounds very much like the life of Samuel Nahles, meeting his wife, Justina, in Venezuela. Thank you both very much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.